Hi, welcome. So we're just going to give everyone maybe one more minute. I see folks are still joining. Let's see. Let me also share my screen. Oh, Danny, you look like you're muted.
Mute. Ah, okay.
Okay, cool.
There we go.
Wonderful. Let me just make sure no one else is joining yet before we start. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on our group therapy for nonprofit fundraisers hosted by SparkPoint Fundraising. I'm Caroline Santos, the Senior Operations and Marketing Manager here at SparkPoint, and I'll be your moderator today, serve as tech support, and share your questions throughout the session. We know that right now, nonprofit leaders and fundraisers are dealing with a lot: shrinking budgets, donor drop-offs, staff turnover. All while still being expected to deliver major results. So we created this space to offer support, share real strategies, and talk through the challenges you're facing with honesty and heart. Today, we're joined by three of our incredible team members: Corinne Harris, Acting Co-CEO and Major Donor Strategist; Hannah Payton, Client Services Manager and Foundation Relations Specialist; and Danny Faulkner, Fundraising Strategist and Grant Writing Expert. Some of the topics we'll be covering today include navigating shifting priorities and adjusting to a changing fundraising landscape, diversifying fundraising streams and strategies, and how to stay grounded and motivated through it all. You're welcome to drop your questions in the Q&A box at any time during the session, and we'll get to as many as we can. Just a few quick housekeeping notes before we jump in. Everyone has been muted except for our presenter. Off your video using the camera button at the bottom left of your screen. We recommend switching to speaker view by selecting it in the top right corner. And if you're on an iPad, tap switch to active speaker view in the upper left corner of your Zoom window. And if you don't see the controls, just tap on your screen or message me and I'll help you figure it out. And if you get disconnected, you can rejoin anytime using the same link that was emailed to you this morning. Also, if you'd like to submit a question during the session, please hover over the More button at the bottom right corner of your screen, and that's where you'll see the Q&A box. This session is also being recorded, and we'll send the full replay to your inbox after the webinar. So now I'll turn it over to Corinne Harris, our fabulous acting co-CEO, to kick things off.
Thank you so much, Caroline, and thanks again, everyone, for being here with you, answer some of your questions, and provide a therapeutic and supportive place for us to talk, vent, ask questions, whatever we need to do, because it's hard out there in these streets. So I'll go ahead and pass it to Caroline. Some people did submit questions in advance, so we're going to start with those questions. And Caroline's going to go ahead and moderate those. And then as you have questions, like Caroline said, put them in the Q&A, and we'll answer them as they come up. And I would love to offer that if someone has a really good point to share, if you have, folks are asking questions and you have expertise to share, please go ahead and share that in the chat as well. All right,
Yeah,
Caroline.
great. So, understanding the landscape and strategic approach is one of the topics that we'll be covering today. And one of the questions submitted by some of our participants today justice organizations navigating the current climate.
I can kick us off with that, and then Corinne and Danny, if you have anything to add. I mean, as we shared in the intro, it's really frustrating and discouraging time in a lot of ways. I think that in my experience with the social justice orgs I work with, and I have the privilege to work with kind of a variety of folks in this space, I think that people are doubling down for the most part. I haven't seen a lot of people trying to change or soften language or, you know, hide parts of their work or disguise things for funders to try to, to avoid like losing funding or making people nervous. And the that if that's who you are as an organization, you need to continue to center that in your work and to try to back away from that, I think, is going to be maybe morally wrong, but also be mission creep, and I don't think it's going to have a good outcome. We all need the funding that we need to carry out our programs and carry out our missions, but I also am a big believer in, like, not all money is good money, and if you have to do that to secure funding, it's probably not the right fit. Corinne, I know we were talking about this morning. Did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I thought a point that Hannah made when her and I were discussing this question this morning was that, you know, 5 years ago, we saw the opposite. We saw a lot of organizations trying to fit into being anti-racist or putting anti-racism language into their grant applications, or were being asked to, frankly, by the foundation. Some funders smelled it then too, right? So like, if you're changing your language in a way that is to attract funders and that maybe are not mission aligned, it's going to be the same as when you were changing your language to act like you were doing anti-racism work and you weren't, right? So being true to yourself. I also think, you know, things that I have seen social justice orgs do outside of foundation funding is to really have the conversation with their individual donors and their stakeholders about how they need them to step up now in this moment so that they don't have to worry about being punished by their federal funders, their state funders, or, you know, they can continue to do the work, and that we need those folks who can step up and be flexible to step up. So those are some things that I've been seeing. Do you have anything to add, Danny?
No, I think you guys hit it. Yeah.
Awesome. Recently had to turn down federal funding because of new anti-DEI requirements. Should we expect to see those anti-DEI requirements trickling down to organizations that provide services to any institutions accepting federal funds? Asking for clarity, is this, that's it.
Is the person who asked this question on the I have some clarifying questions.
This is a very specific issue, so. Oh, Aaron, you're here?
Aaron, okay. Are you a subrecipient of federal grants? Can we unmute Aaron?
Yes. Okay, there we go.
Hi. Yes, thank you so much for taking the question. So, yes, we have both federal grants that we are subrecipient on, and then we had this larger grant that we were going to be the prime recipient on. And my question specifically about setting aside direct federal funding, we also receive a large portion of our revenue through institutional memberships with universities. And we're wondering if we're going to start seeing universities requiring us to sign basically like flow down anti-DEI paperwork in order for them to be able to pay for our services with their federal grants.
If the money is coming directly from their federal grants and they are citing that, it's possible and probably likely that you will see that. Foundations also have other money, or college foundations also have other money, so university foundations, so it's possible that they can move that money around. In, if I were you, I would probably try to be proactive and start those conversations now and have the support of your board where your line is, right? So, like, what language are you willing because I think if it's coming, if any of this money is trickling down federally, it's coming. The other option is to, you know, I mean, I would just see what's available to folks. Like, if, is there other money? Is there other ways that you can structure those partnerships? And can you soften language? I think we're not going to see, though, too, until a full year cycle goes, what people are going to do, yeah. Right? So yeah. some people are waiting to see. Some people are getting those notices because they're on the radar. I think it's been very slapshot. So there hasn't been, you know, one strategy coming down from the federal government, one communication strategy, or one strategy that everyone has to follow. So I think that, you know, it might be that 12 months from now, we're going to really see where people are shifting direction.
Hey, Caroline, I was going to say we have like a follow-up in the Q&A that might touch on this a bit. The idea that there's this banned list of words we can't use along with DEI, Black, underserved, women. I've yet to see this list or who's approved it. So if there is a list, and Valerie, I don't know if you have one or some like a funder actually said you can't do this, that'd be very, very interesting because I would love to see this list. Get to see a known funder come out so blatantly and say, you can't use these words. So I don't know if we can unmute Valerie too, because I would love to know.
I think if I can jump in, I think this might be referring, there was a leaked list from the NSF.
But it wasn't, I mean, I think.
And that's about foundations and federal funders, for example. I mean, I know I have recently transitioned to lead a community-based organization in Washington, D.C. that has women in the title, and our primary focus is on Black women living with HIV. And so, you know, just all the little buzzwords that are, you know, currently raising red flags, especially among federally funded, for federally funded initiatives. And, but, you know, we all know federally funded initiatives tend to have, you know, more multi-year funding. You're able to have, you know, indirect costs. So those are, you know, something that we still want to be able to pursue. But again, with these words that are out there, a lot of organizations like mine are really cautious and careful about how we describe our work, how we describe the communities we serve, all of those things. And it's kind of watering down, you know. You know, any experience dealing with that and, you know, what some strategies might be to help alleviate that.
So, Valerie, my suggestion would be try to get a hold of the program officer for what you are applying for. They're all scared right now. I mean, let's be clear. Everyone that works for the federal government is scared right now. They may or may not be able to talk with you. I would try to talk with them on the phone so that it's not on email. And just say, you know, this is the name of my organization. This is the work that we do. How like, you know, are there red flags? You know, are you seeing ways that, that we may need to shift the conversation? I mean, I wouldn't give them the answer, but I would just try to ask some very general questions, to the grant officer on the other side or the program officer on the other side, if you could get a hold of them.
Thank you. I think this is another thing we're kind of, but like, I feel like it's hard to see the impact of anything in philanthropy until it's been a full year because everything is so cyclical. And I think that like next year, looking back on like, oh, we're interested in this opportunity, let's see who got funded last year, will provide a lot of insight into like, you know, how much impact these types of initiatives are having. And I think it also, like, you know, similar to another point that was raised earlier, like, you can kind of decide where your line is, because I think we all do the dance of kind of trying to mirror, especially with federal programs, like, mirror their language so you know they know that you're talking about the population that they're like charged with serving. But like at some point, you know, we want to use the language that is correct and we want to use the language that is, you know, humanizing and respectful. So some conversations and thinking about where that line is for each organization.
I wanted to add in a piece to this conversation from the NSF, the new NSF requirements that were announced back in May. So this was the big red line for us, which was that it wasn't a specific list of words that are going to be, you know, targeted, but it was specifically a all new awardees, by accepting the award, are certifying that they will not engage in any diversity work in their organization, regardless of whether or not it's specifically funded by this funding. And the NSF reserves the right to withdraw funding retroactively. So, like, this was really, really scary for us. And I'm wondering if other organizations have... What other organizations' reaction to this has been? Because our reaction as a very small nonprofit is we don't have the funds to be able to money. If we've spent it, we've spent it. So we ended up withdrawing our grant entirely. I'm wondering what others have done.
I've heard that folks, the question right now with all of this is how legal it's going to be. And so larger nonprofits and better resourced nonprofits are better able to take a chance, right? They're better able to wait and see than smaller nonprofits. Do you have an attorney on staff or on retainer? Yeah. Okay. Or on board, on your board by chance. So that might be a good thing to maybe recruit for in the next nomination cycle, because I do think that having someone review these types of agreements, because we're gonna see them over the next 4 years, and they're gonna change, because as they get you know, contested and make their way through the courts, they're gonna change them again to where they think that they will stick. So having an attorney look them over and weighing the risk of whether or not funding is going to be really important, especially for community-based organizations.
Yeah. Or even reaching out to the Council of Nonprofits, which is based here in D.C. They've been keeping a really great eye on what's going on, keeping people abreast of next steps and what you need to do. In the beginning, they were taking a Google form of anyone who was impacted by the federal mandate and saying, let us know, we're going to court. So even reaching out to that, and each state has a branch of them that is doing work on the ground. So start there, even if you don't have a legal presence at your nonprofit, they take that on for you. So that's a free, it's on LinkedIn, you can find them. They're really good about sending information about next steps. I mean, I think this morning it was just about AmeriCorps that might be overturned, that decision. So it's moving quickly, but that is a resource you can use to help you find out different ways. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone. Excuse my dog, sorry. He didn't get the notice that I'm on a webinar. So the next question we have is, have you noticed any change in the behavior of funders to increase, redirect, or reduce barriers to access funding? How can we best find them?
I mean, I can start this. I was on a webinar this morning with one who's trying to move that needle. And you see it with emergency funding. They want to know how has your funding been affected or cut or reduced? Do we have additional funding? It might be the case of, hey, we're not going to make you do a report on your current because of all the things going on. I think the best way to find them is start with your current funders and be really honest and transparent about what's going on. I find that folks that don't know, it's because we haven't shared enough. We haven't been transparent. We wait until a report is due to share. this is when those times of, you know, getting out of the formal state of your relationship and saying, hey, this ugly bill just happened and this is how it might affect our nonprofit. You will start to see people like, oh, I didn't know. And they honestly don't know. We have to give some grace to folks. And I know I hate giving grace like that, but some just don't know. So having that conversation of saying, hey, are you aware of this? This does affect our nonprofit. Are you willing to talk about other strategies? A lot want to do emergency funding. They don't know how. And asking, you know, can we be in that process? Does it make sense to do it this way? How will it serve us? Start having those hard conversations and not be afraid that it'll affect your funding, but it might find you a new partner you didn't even know you had. So I would say, yes, it's changing, but we've got to start having conversations. Without that scarcity mindset, we're going to lose the funding once we open up. Hannah, are you all seeing that? I feel like every meeting we were having that discussion of, did you talk to them? Did you say, hey, we need this? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I would reiterate, you know, what you were saying, that I think that relationships and conversations are kind of the way to access any flexibility or additional funding that might be available. What I haven't seen a lot of yet is like formal RFPs for like, hey, we know you're in trouble. I've seen a few, but I think the more successful strategy that I've seen some of the folks that I work with, you know, try is just like Danny said, just going to people and saying, you know, this is what is happening to us. This is what is happening to our clients, our constituents. Don't assume that people know, like lay it out. And, you know, we need more. We need support right now. But I think that's your best shot.
Yeah, I totally agree. I couldn't underscore more the importance of relationships right now, especially with your individual donors and your foundations. I have not seen a lot of people change their application like they did in COVID, right? Where people are like, here's the easy, you know, I haven't seen a lot of people pour money into this. And I will say that in my experience over, you know, several administrations, foundations are wary to step in where federal government steps out.
Yes.
So that is a hard truth. But I think that if you are able to talk to your specific funders to tell them about what's happening, go a long ways. I don't know that foundations are going to do it on their own just based on what they see in the news. So they need to hear from the people that they are supposed to be serving in order to make those changes, whether it's giving a or, you know, endowment and investments for this year, or really, you know, a lot of foundations have actual policies that say that they will. I know our community foundation, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, our community foundation has a policy that they will not be replacement funds for federal funds if someone loses a federal grant. So, you know, you know that you are up against that, but having these conversations and this education could potentially get some of these, especially family and private foundations, to change their policies on that.
Awesome. And continuing the conversation about diversifying funding streams and reaching out to donors, how do we network with private donors or get them to invest in what we are doing is the next question.
Yeah, is the person that asked the question on the call by chance, if you want to stand up? It's a pretty clear question, but I guess where I would love clarification is, are you looking to attract new donors? Or are you looking to increase current donors? And if you're not here, I can speak to both.
Yeah.
Okay. So attracting new donors is a long-term strategy, right? So there are 100 different ideas from that I'm sure your board has told you, right? Go to festivals. Throw an event, show up at the Chamber of Commerce's, you know, XYZ, be everywhere, right? I mean, there's a million different ideas. However, what you're looking for are people that are actually committed to your mission, not just people that can potentially give, right? So you're not just going to high net worth events in order to talk to people. That's not going to work if they don't have a connection to your mission. So my best advice to build and attract new donors in that funnel is to start with a cadence of communication. Make sure that you are putting out newsletters at least monthly, the same time every month. Make sure that you have a presence on all of your social media. Then make sure your website is updated. Those are the foundations. Then start inviting people in. So this can be starting with your board members, your staff members, and their folks. Invite them in to learn more about your organization. Maybe it's a volunteer opportunity. Maybe it's a tour. Lots of different ways to just invite them in. And then make sure you follow up with them and keep them involved. So that's sort of my overview of how to really attract new donors. And I think that if you are hoping to figure out who in your database could possibly give more, there's lots of ways to go about that. There's, wealth screenings, but there's also, the old school building a relationship way. So at a regular cadence, figure out who the people are that are giving every single year. They might be giving $10, but they've maybe been given $10 since 1997, right? So like, find out who your people are that are your ride or dies and really build those relationships with them and develop something authentic. And that is how you can increase their gift.
Yeah. I think my favorite time in my career was working at a community foundation and watching how money flowed in and out of my city. And the one thing I loved was when people would invite me to things, because I was in a lot of ways a gatekeeper to the wealth, to those donors who were willing to give, but because of how things are set up, the community foundation protected them. So if you don't or haven't access to your community foundation, I feel like that's a very free resource to meet with someone there, let them know what you do, invite them to events. Anyone on staff there has the capacity to nominate or let people know what you're doing. That's a really free way to say, what we're about. There are some legal things that community foundations can't do, but what they can do is take a meeting or attend an event so they're aware of what you're doing. So if you haven't done that, I would reach out to someone there, get on their newsletter, attend something they're throwing. So at least if something pops up and they're asking, do I know someone who does this work? They think of you and you're top of mind. So yeah, I would say community foundation is a great resource. Know those people, invite them to things. They love it. They go because they care about your city and your area. So definitely start there. And that's a great way to start if you're looking to add new donors in.
Great. The next question is, what are some successful ways to seek corporate giving and seeking out employer donor matching gifting?
I can start this one. Okay. Who don't know what to do. I feel like anyone has a job. Board members work for someone, or they should. I hope they do. And most corporations have a funding source or a funding arm. So that would be my first task as a new board member. Hey, go talk to your corporation and get us funding. That is one way to start it. That is something they can be tasked with. That is a very easy way for them to start fundraising if they've never thought of fundraising, and let them be in charge of that part of it and then see how it grows. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be, bold, effort, but that is a project each one of them can do every year and say, have you talked to your corporation to give us funding? Have you talked to them to sponsor something? This gives them, their own way to help without writing a check. For those that can't give, a check or have friends who can give checks, they all know someone who works somewhere that has the capacity. And really make sure, like, hey, do this. I see the question, what if your board members aren't working for corporate companies? Are they retired? Did they get stock options? What do we mean when they're not working? Are they have wealth where, they're small business, they're nonprofit. There are other nonprofits. Okay, well, bless their hearts.
Hey, Spirit.
Start there. Like, oh, y'all are fighting for money.
Definitely don't ask other nonprofits to, in this, yeah, this time frame, don't necessarily ask other nonprofits to. However, I'd like to sort of backpack on what Danny said, you know, having accessible levels of giving, you know, for board members or other, or small businesses in your community. So starting there, having ways for people to get involved, a lot of people like, to be able to team building activity. I caution, do not invent things for them to do. Make sure that it is impactful for your organization and something that is not going to stress your staff out. But because if it does those things, it's not going to be impactful for the volunteers. But that's another way to get individuals, you know, interested in your mission, right? So if they bring a group of people, make sure you get all of their information.
And I think
I will also caution that when you look at the pie of giving that, you know, in the United States, corporations is the smallest piece of the pie. So unless you have a well-connected board or a well-connected, like, group of stakeholders that are connected into corporations, you know, or the business community, it is not something that you should waste a lot of your time on. Corporate giving gets a ton of publicity because corporations are good at marketing, but that doesn't mean that they're actually giving a lot of money. It is like a teeny tiny, if you look at the fact that most, and then foundations. So, you know, if you're thinking about where to put your energy, unless you have relationships and you can leverage relationships, corporate isn't it. Sorry, Danny.
I was going to say there's a distinction of corporation, like corporate money. Are you talking the big multi-year 6-7-figure money? Or are you talking your local stores that you go to, you use every day, that they have a local presence, a bank that will give every chapter, every local something has a corporate amount they can give. So what I'm saying, like, anyone can go, you could go to any corporation locally branched and say, here's my 501c3, here's a letter saying how we're going to use this funding, can you donate to us? That is corporate giving in a sense, a smaller sense, but that gets you in the door. So when you go for that bigger money that might be at the corporate headquarters, you can say, hey, I have a local They are, you know, proof that I am in the community. Can I apply for this larger funding? That starts the whole plan and action and the strategy behind it. But a board member can go into any of their corporations, if they work, not a nonprofit, and try to get something, especially with the corporate matching. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, so a lot of nonprofits, we have BG&E, we have a lot of local places where they will match, and it's just an employee has to ask for it. So that's where you start. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would add is that, you can do a lot of research and try and figure it out, but corporate giving is often pretty opaque because they don't have the same reporting standards as like a foundation. So having a person who is your way in is usually the way to go, whether that is, you know, a board member who can make introductions, or, you know, maybe that's the person you've been talking with. Like Danny was kind of talking about, if you want to see if there are other pots of money, a lot of times there are, and that's a good conversation to have, but it tends to work better like person to person. And something that I don't like about fundraising is that it's all pretty transactional, but we have to pretend that it isn't. But corporate donors pretend a little less, though it's also good to come in with a slightly different mindset than when you're having conversations with your foundation partners and maybe have, you know, a prepped list of like, this is what you would get from this partnership. Like, these are the ways we would recognize you. These are the events where we can put up your name, and kind of be prepared to have that conversation too.
And I would just add that if you're going to start, the way that Danny was suggesting, with your local, you know, branches, start with your vendor list, right? Like, who do you bank with? Who is your CRM with? Who, you know, all, who do you bank from? That would be soliciting, you know, some basically sponsorships, and then you can move those sponsorships into those larger corporate giving grants.
Great. So we have a couple questions, one in the Q&A and then one in the chat. Our Q&A question is, what are you seeing with major donors? Are they stepping up or holding back due to uncertainty in the markets and their portfolios, et cetera? And if, because they saw a recent article in the Chronicle of Philanthropy about this, and things sound pretty mixed.
I concur. Yeah. Things are pretty mixed. What I will say is that it depends on the level of wealth of your major donor, right? So if you are dealing with incredibly high net worth individuals, I learned this lesson by one of them telling me, we don't pay attention to the stock market. Like that does not have anything to do with how I give. And so the level of wealth, those folks are, and if you have them in your portfolio, they are still giving and you can ask for more. Another thing that I learned is that in political fundraising, they ask for 3 times the amount that the last time you gave. So I don't necessarily think that you should do that, but I think that right now, if you have a good relationship with your major donors, it's okay to ask for double. They can say no and tell you what they're comfortable with, and they will. But right now, especially if you are losing funding in other areas, I think that that is okay to do. You just have to talk to them. But yes, I do think it's mixed, and I do think that people that, like, the stock market is not really down necessarily, but I do think that people are still, for 3 years, is a recession coming? And so if our major donors are $1,000 a year and $5,000 a year, and that is a stretch gift for them, that is a large and meaningful gift, those folks are the ones that are waiting. Pledges, multi-year pledges, are not something people are interested in right now. So maybe 3 years, maybe 5 years is out the window at this point. So, you know, pledges used to be a way to get a large gift and spread it out. No. And now it's sort of, you know, people, since COVID, people don't know how to plan. It's kind of been, you know, an up and down.
I mean, I'll touch on that. It's really because it's a younger donor now. You see family foundations switching over. Another generation is taking over that wealth, and they're deciding, we want impact now. We don't want to wait 2, 3, 5 years. What are you going to do with this gift now? So that's the trend I'm seeing of, is you have a younger, and I say younger, my age, mid-30s, 40s, taking over for their parents and saying, yeah, we're not going to wait. We want this to be of action. Here's the money. Let's go. So if anything, the mixed change has been that of, like, oh, wow, you ready with a plan so they know what the money is going to go towards. So it's more or less, let's do this in 9 to 12 months rather than 9 to 12 years. So yeah, that's the change I'm seeing.
And I think, you know, just really knowing your donors and knowing what they are passionate about in your mission, and keeping them informed and involved and close, year over year, you should not see a decline if you are doing your relationship building, because people will continue to prioritize that giving.
Awesome. And we have a comment question in the chat. So they're new to foundation engagement, and they're helping their organization diversify from government funding that abruptly disappeared. Are there online or membership resources that they can use to find or connect to foundations?
Or sort of making connections.
Or prospecting. Is that, I'm assuming it's just prospecting.
Prospect researcher.
Is that person still here?
I'm looking.
All of the above.
Okay.
There are a lot of different prospecting subscriptions that you can buy. I really like Instrumental. There's Foundation Center that works really well too, or Foundation Center is called something else.
It's Candid now.
The Grants Professional Association, if you are a member, you can get free access to Grant Station, mm-hmm. which has improved over the years. Mm-hmm. They're also a great place. The Grants Professional Association has like a sort of like an internal message mm-hmm. board, and it's a great place to talk to people about what you're seeing, what's happening. Sources. You can ask almost any question and folks will help support you in foundations. Sometimes they'll even tell you who the contact is. The way to find the contact, who to contact at a foundation, if it's not immediately available on their website, like you can look at their 990 to find out who you might be able to contact. And then, you know, at SparkPoint, when we have clients that we do a bunch of research for, we lead them through a relationship mapping exercise. So we get together a handful of their staff and board to look at all of the content. We've done the research. We know who to contact at the foundation, who their board members are. And then we ask them to see if they have any connections, because that connection, that warm handoff is a great way to make the initial call with a foundation. You always want that warm handoff or introduction, but if you don't get it, cold call. And I don't mean cold email, I mean cold call. Give them a call and introduce yourself and ask them questions about what they're funding and what they're doing, and then determine what you're going to pitch to them or talk to them about.
I would say too, if you're trying to build up you know, like a foundation portfolio kind of from scratch. Foundations that have open applications are getting pretty overwhelming responses right now, is what I've heard across a lot of different clients that I work with. So some good resources, I would look for things that are local to you, geographically or like through a specific community, or things that are really tailored to your issue area. And so I think going back to a point Danny made earlier, like your local nonprofit association or your local, local resources like that, community foundations are good places to start, not just reaching out with this question and saying like, maybe I see that you have this opportunity later this year, we'll apply for this. Is there anything else you'd recommend? And if you have even one foundation funder, going to them and saying, here's the situation. We have lost this funding. We're trying to build this up. Is there anybody you would recommend? Is there anybody you can introduce us to? Because I think that those relationships and kind of like being in the same space as people, the same community as people, is where you're going to find the greatest success, especially when you're starting out.